Our final speaker today, Jeffrey H.
All right. My name is Jeffrey, and I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God and good sponsorship and the 12 steps of AA, I haven't had to take a drink since December 28th, 1985, and for that I'm forever grateful. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to speak here today. It's an interesting process, and I want to also thank the first two speakers, Don and Carl, for a really incredible message. You know, I think the three of us should get a bus and go on the road someplace. We could call it the Grateful Living or something like that. Go from town to town speaking. And that's sort of my dream, actually, to speak for AA wherever I'm asked to go. I just, it's not my story, it's your story. I'll tell you a little bit about how I got here, but most of it's your story. You know, I owe so much to AA. Nothing I say today is original. You know, it's all learned, inherited. Dawn said we learn to listen. I love that. It's so true. We really learn to listen deeply. I got up today as I usually did, and I meditated a little bit. I prayed a little bit. I started my day praying about what was going to happen today. I got nervous about coming here. I've been nervous several times. I'm not actually nervous now for some reason. And I think that's because of all of you and all the love here and all the love that I'm feeling here. Because when I feel love, I don't feel nervous. And that's really what this is about, love and service. We learn how to love, how to give love, and how to receive love. And I've gotten so much. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers. I want to thank the fathers here today. From the beginning, you know, I was wired to be alcoholic, although I didn't really realize it, you know, at the time. I didn't grow up thinking I was going to be an alcoholic. That wasn't my life's dream at all, or my life's nightmare, as it became. You know, it wasn't my plan at all, you know. I was, I think of myself as a special child, you know. Which tells you a lot already, you know. I was a very special child, you know. I had special needs. I was the oldest. I cried a lot. I demanded things from my parents, more than my brothers and sisters. Always thought that I was number one in everything I did. I was a nerd in school. I loved to learn. And both of my parents really liked learning. So learning was really valued. What did you learn? How did you learn? And so I learned how to, you know, learn. You know, I would sit in the room and read the encyclopedia because if I knew things, then I was more powerful than you. You know, so I knew that I didn't have enough power very early on. I felt weak. I felt ineffectual. Even when I succeeded, I didn't feel very successful. And so I had this kind of strange personality that was waiting for the first drink. The first time I drank alcoholically, I knew that I was drinking alcoholically. Not while I was drinking, but afterwards. First time I drank alcoholically, I was in a play with adults. I was 16. They had a cast party. And during the cast party, I went into a blackout. And I was in the blackout for most of the cast party. I came out of the blackout, and some people were feeding me coffee and telling me I was going to be all right. This was in 1967, so you just drove anyway. They put me in my car. I drove home drunk. There were no seatbelts, and I drove home drunk. And my mother, you know, came out of the bedroom and said, you know, oh, you're drunk, and she went back to bed. The next day, I went back to the play. She probably thought, you know, finally he'll calm down a little bit, you know, give him some alcohol. You know, really, I was very tightly wound. You know, my grand sponsor, Clancy, talks about this coil that spins around inside of us, gets tighter and tighter and tighter until we have to get the drink. And that's how I was. I had this tightly wound coil inside of me. And so alcohol worked in that way. It took away any fear I might have had of these adults in this play. However, the problem was that I went into a blackout. I didn't know what a blackout was, so I looked it up in a medical encyclopedia, and I discovered that I had alcoholic amnesia or alcoholic psychosis. They both sounded really bad to me. I knew enough about psychology to know that you didn't want amnesia and you didn't want psychosis when you went outside to mix with people. So I scolded myself, which I began to do for the rest of my drinking. You know, get it together, don't let this happen again, just be cool, be normal. You know, coming into the program, I learned, you know, a lot of this, that I'd been scolding myself my whole life. You know, we were really brutal on ourselves. I also learned in the program that I had an illness, that I didn't give it to myself, and I therefore couldn't take it away. And if I couldn't take it away, I needed a power greater than myself to take it away. That was the only thing that would take it away. There's no cure, there's no operation. I drank alcoholically for 16 years, the way I just described, in blackouts. There were periods where I didn't drink alcoholically. Here and there, things would happen, and it would settle down for a while, but it really escalated the last 5 years. I've sponsored people who came into the program in their mid-teens, and they often say, I don't know how I could be an alcoholic. I only drank 5 years, and I always say, I only drank alcoholically 5 years also. You don't have to drink long to be an alcoholic. It's just how you drink and what happens when liquor goes into you. The last year of my drinking, I was having two blackouts a week. I'd organized my life in such a way that I could have two blackouts a week. I lived in and out of amnesia, coma, amnesia, psychosis, psychosis, amnesia, amnesia, psychosis. Honestly, I would pick fights. I got thrown out of the front of the bar. I'd come back in the back of the bar. They'd say, you again, throw me out in the front. This happened over and over again, you know. I would end up in a pool of blood, my own blood, and maybe somebody else's. I have no idea, you know. And this is how I drank, you know. It was really, really awful. I don't have to tell you that. It was really, really awful. I didn't know how I ended up that way. You know, I couldn't control it. You know, I just couldn't stop, you know. I would start to pick up, and I'd stop. In the last 3 or 4 years of my drinking, I tried to control it. People would tell me, you know, please just don't drink tonight, you know, and I couldn't not drink, you know. So the shame was enormous. I built up more and more shame of my conduct and how I behaved. I was also doing a lot of things illegally. I didn't know they were illegal, honestly. I just went in and out of the law. It was a very fuzzy world that I lived in. Right from wrong. There was really no right from wrong, you know. And I drank the hardest, strongest alcohol I could find. I was not a light beer drinker, ever. You know, really, really hard alcohol. I also did drugs, but this is AA, so I'll talk about drinking. But I did hard drugs also and hard alcohol, you know. At the end of my drinking, I was drinking straight vodka out of a bottle. And if I went someplace where I didn't think that they would have alcohol, I would bring alcohol with me. If I knew they weren't going to be serving alcohol, I had to have alcohol. There were definitely consequences for my drinking. I was arrested and jailed. I lost jobs. I lost relationships. I was thrown out of the building where I was living. I was living in a building, Lower Manhattan, mid-80s, and it was right down the street from the Mud Club, where I spent a lot of time, if anybody was there then. And it was a strange building, because it had sort of been bought by some people with their parents, so we all kind of owned it together. It was not what you call a co-op, an ordinary co-op. And so my drinking was causing so much problem in the building, and they kind of began to trace it back to me, because I would come home and I'd be passed out in the lobby when they leave in the morning. So they'd know that it was me. And I'd come home in cabs, and I would not pay the cab driver, and the cab driver would buzz every buzzer in the building. So they finally figured out it was me. And then there was also a robbery in the building, and they connected that to me also. And so they raised some money to ask me to move out. This was the last year of my drinking. They actually paid me to move out of my building. So as an alcoholic, as an active alcoholic, I actually thought, this is great. Now I have some money. So I spent my last 6 months drinking pretty much in a blackout the whole time, just drinking away that money. I did work at the same time. Strangely enough, I had jobs, and I got paid to do jobs, and I actually was accomplished somewhat. So it was a very strange world to live in. I have no idea how I got to AA. It's a complete miracle. All I know is that I was living in this world trying to not drink. I was going to different doctors, going to the gym, doing things like that. And suddenly, somebody said to me, I went to AA, and they were all really nice to me, and they invited me out for coffee. So I got this idea that I could go to AA. And after the next blackout and violent incident, I called AA, and somebody picked up the phone at Intergroup. So actually, I do know how I got to AA. I got to AA through Intergroup. And they said, where would you like your meeting? I had no idea at that time that there were more than one meeting in New York City. I honestly had no knowledge of AA at all. None at all. None whatsoever. I hadn't researched it. Being the nerd I was no interest in researching AA. I just went to the first meeting. And when I got to that meeting, they were all really nice to me, and they invited me out for coffee. I still remember that today. And the one person who did listen to me, I talked on and on about myself. He told me that it was really easy to stay sober. I just had to change my whole life. So I really related to what Don was saying. You know, you've changed your whole life. And I remember saying to him at that time, I said, oh, harsh, my life is fine. It's just the drinking. And so after my next relapse, I relapsed a couple of times. After my last relapse, I finally got a sponsor, and I got into the program. And it was actually incredible from the very beginning. You know, I got a sponsor, and I said to my sponsor, you know, I have to tell you, I don't believe in God. I hear you talking about God. I don't believe in God. And he said, that's all right. God believes in you. Now just sit down. And he said it with such confidence that I had to believe that he was onto something that I didn't understand, you know. And, you know, he said, you know, you and me equals a power greater than ourselves. That's all you need to know. The good in me finds the good in you. And that's the message from Bill to Bob. We need each other, you know. And he would talk to me about things, and he would tell me, you know, I would talk about my day, you know, I was counting days. And after the last relapse, he said, you know, if you want to relapse again, and I said, oh, no, I don't want to relapse again. He said, nobody plans to relapse. You know, you'll want to relapse a minute before you relapse. Call me first. This was in 85, and we used to write down people's numbers on a coin, a piece of paper on it, and wrap it around a coin so that if we wanted to call them, we could reach into our pocket and we'd find the coin that we were reaching to buy our liquor with. In 85, the phones were attached to the wall. You didn't carry them around with you. So the next time I wanted to drink, I called this guy, and I said, I want a drink. I'm sorry, I just really want a drink. And it was like the roar of the ocean at the highest tide you've ever heard. In my head, I wanted to drink. It was so loud. And he said, can you pray? And this is the first time we'd actually talked about active prayer. And so I said what came into my head, which was, yes, but I don't want to. I don't know why I said I don't want to. I think part of me thought that's not going to work. I wanted him to talk me out of it. I wanted him to invite me out for double cheeseburgers with bacon. I wanted something better. And he said, pause, and he said, then I can't help you. And I said, okay, all right, a little prayer? No problem. I'll pray. And I went to the back room, and I closed the blinds so no one would see me praying if they walked behind the house. This is January. Nobody's going to walk behind my house and watch me praying. I was a fall-down drunk, threw up on myself at my sister's wedding, but I didn't want anybody to see me praying. I said the prayer, and it worked. I didn't drink. And I began to pray. I began to understand the power of prayer. In fact, it was so overwhelming that I couldn't believe that it worked so well. And I've sponsored other men who've gone out, and I've given them the prayer, and it hasn't worked with some of them. So I don't understand why it works with some people and why it doesn't work with other people. I honestly don't understand this thing at all. You know, I've sponsored dozens and dozens of people over the years. Some of them get it, some don't get it. I don't really understand it. I know what works for me a day at a time and how to do it. You know, I got through the steps. You know, one of the things coming into the program, I really hated my father. I hated him so badly, and I would talk to these men about my father, and finally they said, leave this man alone. He's done everything he can. He tried to raise you, you know. Leave him alone. The father you crave is yet to come. It's within you. You'll find the father you need within you. You'll be able to father him and everybody else. And that was so true. What an incredible prayer. The father you crave is yet to come. It's within you. Leave him alone. When I finally made amends to my father, he said, I could never figure out why you hated me so much. And I said, I don't know either, Dad. I'm really sorry, but I don't hate you anymore. And he said, and he just started weeping. He said, you know, I just would wake up thinking about you and crying, you know, thinking about how you were. You know, I worried so much about you for so many years, you know. And my father and I, he died last year. We became really close the last 5 years of his life. He was not an easy man in a lot of ways, you know, but he was a wonderful person, and he was my father. And he gave me the gift of life, and he taught me how to speak and how to value language, and he taught me how to care for older people and babies. He was always really interested. If a baby came in the room or if an older person came in the room, he'd immediately zone in on those two. He believed those were the most important, the very old and the very young. And that's a really important thing to teach somebody, and I still remember that today. You know, and he taught me much more, but, you know, the thing is that at the end of his life, we were so close. We were so near each other all the time. My brother and sister would say, you go and talk to him. You're the only one he'll listen to. Thank you. And the last day he was alive, I was with him in his room. He was staying in an assisted living place at that time. And he said, it feels like just yesterday I was pushing your stroller. And I said, Dad, it was yesterday. And tomorrow I'll still be with you. You can go now. And he died 2 hours later. And I got the call that he died. And I just knew, you know, that it was going to be all right. That he was going to be all right. And that we were all right, you know. And that, you know, so this is what AA has given me. It's given me this and so much more, you know, that I'm able to. And because of that, because of this release of this hatred that I had toward my father and so many other people, I've really been able to love in a way, and I've felt this father you crave, you know, within me coming, you know, and I'm really happy about that. You know, AA has given me so much. This thing really, really works, you know. It hasn't been easy for me. You know, the last year I've had some, you know, things that happened to older people have been happening to me. I'm 66 now, you know. I know that for some people that's not old, but for me it's definitely old, you know. But what the thing that sustained me throughout it all is constant prayer. The big book says that. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. Constantly, you know. It says each day we carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. That's a beautiful promise. It doesn't say that we must do that. It says we must do that, but we also can do that. And it's incredible to have a vision of God's will, you know. I have things happen to me sometimes in my work life that I get nervous about, things that appearances I have to go, and I carry the vision of God's will into those activities. I just say, God, you go there, and you're there when I get there. So when I get to that room, I'll know you're there. I learned how to do that in AA from my sponsors when I was doing ninth-step amends, and I didn't want to make amends to people. They would say, just ask God to go before you, and you'll know God's there. You know, you and me equals a power greater than itself. That's the message of Bill and Bob. You know, Bill needed Bob to come to Akron in order to stay sober. And I needed these men to come into my life and help me to stay sober. You know, my home group is the Atlantic group. My sponsor, Yisrael, has been an Atlantic group and a Pacific group member. He lives in Jerusalem now. I speak with him frequently. Good sponsorship is so vital to this thing. you know, and we've been to two internationals together. We're looking forward to going to Detroit next year, or 2 years, when is it, 2020? Yeah, we're looking forward to going to Detroit together. We go to the Bill Wilson every year together, you know. So this is the center, you know. When I put AA in the center of my life, as Dawn was saying, it spills out into everything else. And I spent years in AA sort of trying to make AA sort of an extracurricular activity. It does not work. It's not an extracurricular activity. It's either the main event or it's nothing, you know. And that's my message today. You know, make this the main event, and it will spill out in every direction for you. Thank you very much.